You are tuned into Enemy Combatant Radio on enemycombatantradio.net. And this is DJ Sweetie with In the Meantime. And I've got in the studio tonight Melissa and Bernard from Inkworks, and we're going to be back in a few minutes to talk with them about what they do and their vision of the world and alternative economics.
Wrestling with stress puppies in the data swamp.
Speed skating with wolves on the glass ceiling.
Beating off the rat race with a mouse.
Face it, you're too busy to lose the kind of money you're making.
It's time to put our strong hand in your pocket.
Turn it over. Give it up. Submit.
To Boom Bust.
Fly in on Boom.
Drive home on a bus.
Boom.bust. A platform agnostic, browser blind, big
college. We can get you prepared for the 31st century with advanced programming in quad rendering and Java++ scripting language. We offer advanced job placement assistance. So upgrade your gray matter, cause one day it may matter, may matter, may matter, may matter, may matter. Upgrade your gray matter, cause one day it may matter. Upgrade your gray matter, cause one day it may matter. Upgrade your gray matter, cause one day it may matter.
Coming from the outer regions of the universe, Deltron Zero and Automator, check it. Upgrade your gray matter, cause one day it may matter. Hey, time for you to upgrade, fuck save, time to load. All my rhymes to sold and find your own. Salivate over what I collaborate with high-tech wizardry and breathe new life into the industry. Save to the hard drive for the archives. 3030 with a global apartheid. Sensitivity ain't the energy. Brain chemically contorted with no coordinates to your ordinance. Upgrade your gray matter, cause one day it may matter. Yo, your recovery slow, my dual input plus my modem, the tool synth. Long songs, instrumental, digital professor. I school you on the art and how it's texture map. Get to act together, my style is mega. Educate the heads of eight lonely beggars. Only shred of evidence is a virtual file. Stored within the cerebellum, hit you burka with style. Upgrade your gray matter, cause one day it may matter. Defense capabilities with ape agility. Take possibilities to the point of senses shatter. Rinse the babbling. I'm meditating on a homo sapien. With no education, I'm 3D acceleration. My programming language is the strangest. To come to grips with mechanized mischief. Kicks it off with circular projectiles, X-Files. Herald as the most important dwarf, the corporates. Upgrade your gray matter, cause one day it may matter. I reduce the gain when I put you used to saying I loosen. No artists are few between you screen. My renders are splendor 360, reflecting quickly. Increase your dispeed so you can upgrade your gray matter, cause one day it may matter. Production model is the stuff to boggle minds. You got a log on time of exactly 36 nanoseconds. Ambidextrous with ambience. Watch the cannons twist while I lock out where word warfare logistic elopes with psychotropics to optimize my profits. Envelop you with development kits to help me to embellish the elements dynamic into intelligence. Upgrade your gray matter, cause one day it may matter. Look at here. As soon as I release the chip, you cease to rip. Synopsis, you wanna top this? Reach to it. Digital retouch, reconstruct your whole conglomerate with the armaments we use with tolerance, such as a G-bomb, cyborg with three arms. Translate the ancient language with real machines. Polystream, conducting electrons. Eltron, strengthened with molecular bonds. Upgrade your gray matter, cause one day it may matter. Upgrade your gray matter, cause one day it may matter.
Okay, this is DJ Sweetie on In the Meantime on enemycombatantradio.net. We're broadcasting live first and third Tuesdays of every month at 6 p.m. Pacific time. And this show is about collectives, cooperatives, how they work, and how they fit into our larger economy and our society, often their role within larger social movements. And I'm DJ Sweetie here with Melissa and Bernard from Inkworks.org. And why don't we just go ahead and ask them how they joined Inkworks and something about their history. So, Melissa, why don't you start?
Yeah, I'm Melissa. I've been at Inkworks for almost 3 years. I'm the bookkeeper, so I'm not a part of the production that they do there, that we do there. And because the collective, it's a long-standing collective workplace, you know, and it's a union shop, and so there are all sorts of appealing things about working in an environment like that. Not only do you get to work in a cooperative workplace, but you also get to support and be connected to a broader movement.
Excellent. All right, and Bernard?
Well, I have nothing to say. She took it all. My name is Bernard. I've been at Inkworks since the first Gulf War, and came to Inkworks because I have a political background, had some skills in the trade. I worked in a co-op shop in Chicago, where I came from, and I guess having worked in commercial shops for about 15 years before I got to Inkworks, made it really apparent to me, especially with the first Gulf War, that there were better things to do with my life than simply earn some bucks and waste my time trying to find some leisure time. At Inkworks, we try to integrate what we do. We don't do only print for nonprofit community, and so there's aspects of what we do that requires a lot of skills and technical know-how. Nonprofit community has grown as Inkworks has grown. Inkworks is 30 years old.
So tell us something about, you said it's definitely a kind of a highly skilled work environment. How is it that you bring new people into Inkworks, and do you have some sort of a hiring process that you use?
Well, yeah, it's not easy to find people who sort of bond with the political project and all have skills, but it's not impossible. It may be a little more difficult these days because, as with everything else in this economy, certain skills have been eliminated from the workforce. So it's, you know, for example, we find people who have computer skills and graphic skills more readily than we find people who have printing skills, because printing equipment is basically a 5 to maybe 10-year experience at working on them, and it's not that easy to find people. But it's not that difficult to find people who bond with the project, and if they have some skills, we've been in the mode of training people for additional skills so that they can work with us. The main thing is to bond with the project that we're about. We can't offer high pay and a cushy job, but we can offer something that most capitalist firms can't offer, which is a say in the shop and how to run things. And that becomes really important for people, even if they can't quite imagine what that means before they get hired on, and only sort of speculate about what that might mean. And we should get a little more depth on that.
Yeah, well, tell me, first of all, how do people hear about Inkworks? Is it simply they're coming in as a regular job and then they're surprised to find out they do actually have some say in the process? Or are they looking for that kind of a structure to join? Do they want to join a worker co-op?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, when we have openings, we advertise our jobs widely and to the trade mostly. So it's really interesting because the printing trade is not really a hotbed of collectivism or even political action in the right direction. So, you know, we get a lot of trade inquiries, and then we explain to people, well, here's how we do it. And, you know, they lift an eyebrow, or they may not, like, as you know, as Bernard said, they may not even bond with the larger political vision, but they sure can bond with the real advantages of working in a collective or a cooperative structure, which is job security, you know, which is absent, almost completely absent in the printing trade now. And, you know, a say in how the thing is run. So there's that. And then we work with so many political and nonprofit groups in the Bay Area that people are always asking us about, you know, job openings, especially in the front, not on the machines. And I think the other thing that's important is that there's kind of a generational thing going on, which is that a lot of the political people in the 70s wanted to become printers. They wanted to grab those means of production and start creating their own messages and propaganda. And that's, you see a lot of political print shops coming out of the 70s. And I think what's going on now is it's less manufacturing oriented, and political people of the 2000s and the 90s are interested in design and electronic media and those kinds of communication forms. So we kind of pull people in with that, and then in some cases train them on the machines.
Mm-hmm. So. That's really interesting. And why do you think people are less interested in the actual print side of things these days as opposed to the design?
Well, why have trade schools, public trade schools, been eliminated, shops in high schools? I mean, there's a whole de-skilling and deindustrialization that's been going on. You go into any bookshop and pick up a book, for example, and find out where it was printed. You'll find hardly any book printed in the United States. With most of the stuff we do, well, we can print anything from a business card to a book, and we do that pretty consistently. We do a range of printing because the nonprofit community in this area asks us to. They trust what we do, that we can provide good work at an affordable price. Most shops wouldn't take that kind of a range. They would specialize in one way or another. But in any case, what we can, I think I lost the train of thought here.
Oh, about the deindustrialization.
Yeah, right. So what's happened is that these skills are hard to come across. I think San Francisco is really, really benefits from the City College program, which does offer printing skills. And one of our part-time workers, a woman who runs a press at our shop, teaches a class there to designers about actual press operations so that designers can learn a little bit about the mechanism of printing. It's one thing to learn how to design for the web. It's another to learn how to transfer those skills to print production.
Where are books and things being printed? You said they're not being printed in the United States anymore. Where is that going?
Well, it's no secret. Much of that work is in Asia now.
China, for instance, or across the
Yeah. World? Hong Kong had been a source for much high-end advertising for years and years, and that's branched off now into many other areas. Mm-hmm.
Four-color printing in particular, right? And I remember art books being one of some of the first books to be printed offshore.
So tell us about what kind of political groups you work with now, and what's a little bit of the history of that. I mean, what do you mean you work with political groups? You do contracts for them?
Well, let me start off, and maybe Alyssa can... Actually, she knows a lot about our customer base, being the bookkeeper. She's in tune with a lot. InkWorks started as actually... a project with people who are involved in supporting Central American movements in the 70s and 80s. The shop itself actually grew out of a high school. The space the high school was in the 70s, a free school, had an old printing press, and the people putting the school together thought it would be cool to use the press to teach a skill to some of the kids. So they themselves learned how to print. The school came to an end, but they still had these skills, and they thought it would be great to put out a calendar for the Bay Area. That calendar was a great advertising piece because it meant that people could see the size and the quality of the work done, and that slowly, a 2-3-person shop slowly grew to what we have now, which is over 20 people and quite a few presses and lots of capacity. The political scene changed a bit and is still changing, but what has happened is many of the people who were involved in politics got involved in the growth of the nonprofit community. And so there was some transfer of individuals from one arena, one area of society to another. And the goodwill that InkWorks had built up doing political work transferred to a more commercial area.
Yeah, we started out as a movement servicing shop, and we still do a lot of deeply discounted and donated movement work. But we also have pretty mainstream nonprofit clients as well. We print the business cards for Family Violence Prevention Fund, which is a a barrier, but then we printed all those anti-war signs at the beginning of the Iraq War. You know, sort of most of the things probably that you see at demos and in people's windows were printed at Inkworks. And some of them were donated. Some of them were taken on as publishing projects by our publishing committee, you know, identified a need out there for a message and just printed something. And then in other cases, groups have come to us and asked to collaborate on projects or, you know, sort of ad hoc something. So it's across the whole spectrum.
Who decides then if there's something you all within the group want to see printed? How do you do that?
Well, those are contentious discussions. I mean, we have a publishing committee who brings proposals to the collective, and the collective decides, the entire collective, by a sort of modified consensus process, which is especially important around political projects, that we all can sort of get behind the message and agree to donate our resources to it.
That has been contentious sometimes, though?
Well, a little bit when I've been there. I'm mostly not speaking from firsthand experience. I've heard stories. So maybe, I don't know if Bernard can...
Well, ideally, the way it should work is Inkworks at the beginning of the year should sort of take a larger view in terms of what the issues we think are important for the coming year that we want to donate our technology towards, and then sort of scope out what's out there and make some overtures. So that's the ideal. But oftentimes, what happens is people come to us with a project. And maybe two or three people come to us with a project, and we have to decide, balance the needs here and what's. But to do something that might cost $5,000 or $6,000 means that the people coming to us project, not that we're going to donate that much money, but that the whole total cost of the project is like that, have to have distributing the piece, a way of funding it, and making that piece grow for whatever purpose they want. And oftentimes that's not altogether worked out. And so it's, as that's sort of being worked out, there's a deadline approaching and we have to meet that. So the toss-up here is how much can we expend the technology we have to push that along?
I mean, you said that some things were, a lot of printing had moved out of the country. Do you find yourself ever doing that, outsourcing basically any of your material, any of your work outside the country? Or is that problematic, or is that just a normal way of doing things?
Well, Bernard can probably speak to this as the person who handles the buyouts. I know we do buy out some work to other shops. We never go outside the country. We rarely go outside the Bay Area, if ever, and we try to always use union labor. I think that's now maybe speaking out of turn, so I'll let you. We have collaborations and connections with other shops, but it's not... For us, it's not a part of our normal operating procedure at all. And in fact, it's one of the things that we actively work against by trying to support other small, locally owned union shops.
So that's an important part of of being a collective, being a co-op, right?
Well, we're union organized. We're a worker co-op. And we're also a certified green business in Alameda County. So being a certified green business means more than just the inspections and being sure that we recycle the waste paper and so forth. It means also having a perspective on the stuff we use. I mean, we use paper. All the paper we stock in the shop, and we stock tons and tons of paper. You try to imagine a shop with printing equipment that can run a sheet that's 2 feet by 3 feet, booklets and so forth, and magazines. So that paper... from several sources, but all the sources are certified as promoting recycled goods, preferably chlorine-free. Most paper is bleached in the process of making the paper. The pulp is bleached. That bleach is made up of chlorine elements. That chlorine interacts with the environment and creates dioxin, and we all know what dioxin is. So this stuff is poison. There's ways in which that process can be eliminated, but we face, you know, a small shop, we face a huge conglomerate of paper manufacturers who don't give two hoots about the environment unless they're pressed to it. And unfortunately, it's not that we vending out of the country, but that we have to be very cautious of the sources of our material that we're using. The raw material we're using is really important to us because it marks what we're trying to do. I mean, we're a democratically run economic organization, which is already unusual. And it just seems like common sense that that sort of organization is going to be sustainable in a larger sphere. It's not only ideologically sustainable, it's got to be environmentally sustainable, community-based sustainable. It has to have all these elements in it. And as the shop has grown, all these aspects have come to it. It's not like you start off that way, you grow. And it's a process where we've, to a great extent, taken the lead on some of this stuff, but now we're not all that unusual. I mean, people are sort of familiar with recycled paper. But somebody had to start the ball rolling. Someone
go to the nuclear.
Come on.
I think that's one of the exciting things about working in a co-op or a collective in an industrial setting is that you have the power, you know, and the opportunity to exert that kind of pressure for sustainability up and down your supply chain in your industry. You know, we partner with Pedal Express to have our jobs delivered and on a bike. You know, we partner with New Leaf Paper to have the paper that comes to us be completely, you know, 100% post-consumer waste recycled. So other collectives and co-ops that are in industries where they have those kind of opportunities, that's one of the things that is really exciting to me, is that potential to ripple outward from just your own small business.
Would you say that the number one priority of Inkworks, is it the bottom line, or is it something about maintaining your internal kind of democracy, or what would you say is the kind of the overriding priority? Because I imagine that in a competitive environment like that, I mean, that puts a lot of pressure on you to cut corners. That's why I asked about outsourcing. You know, are you facing those kinds of decisions on a daily basis, or is it pretty much, you know, stable and fairly, you know, in kind of a cruise mode at this point?
It's never a cruise mode.
It's an ongoing struggle. I mean, our daily decisions have to balance all of those things. We have a few bottom lines, like we only use recycled paper, I think. Maybe there's a little flexibility in there. I recall some of the salespeople talking about there are different grades of recycled paper, you know, and things like that. One of our other bottom lines is that we take care of our workers. You know, we won't sacrifice our health benefits. We won't sacrifice our wage unless. So I'm not sure that you can point to one particular bottom line. I mean, there are competitive pressure in the printing industry that we feel every day, and we struggle with how to support ourselves while maintaining our principles. We're lucky in that our customer base also supports that struggle for the most part, so they are willing to pay more for recycled paper, that kinds of stuff.
Right. Some people don't understand why we're unionized if we're worker-owned, for example. And that, I think, discussing this a little bit might make it clear what are the issues that we're resolving and trying to deal with. We're unionized because we feel that that's the best way we can demonstrate our affinity and support for the struggle that ordinary working people have committed themselves for over 100 years in this country, 200 years maybe. But at the same time, we're owners. I mean, in some of the co-op movement, there is this concern about entrepreneurship, as if that is a plus in an environment that knows nothing else. And it seems to me that what we really are about is a balancing act. We're caught in an environment that we have little control over, but we have more control over it than most people. And we've been able to do that against a lot of odds. And I feel that it's... And we're not alone. I mean, we're part of a network of print shops across the country, a Progressive Western Mass. We're not alone, but yet we are very unique in the sense that we manage to balance the needs of our membership, ourselves, the needs of the shop in this capitalist environment, and our customers. And that's not easy to do. I mean, it's but it makes life very interesting, and it creates the kind of environment that people appreciate almost instinctively. That is, we care about what we're doing, and if someone has a complaint about something, it's addressed immediately, whether it's a member or it's a customer or whatever. I mean, it's the way we operate. There's old IWW saying of creating a new society old. Well, we're sort of mean to be, it's a very modest sort of...
It's a bold claim. But...
Yes, I know. stop me if I get to be exaggerated. But it's,
but
you
feel that, you're doing something like that.
Yeah, and just to go back to the earlier part of the conversation, when people come on, they don't, if they've never had this experience, and I'm thinking of a new member we right now, they're a little put back because they don't understand, in a sense, how they have a voice in a situation which they've grown up, if they've been working in the trade, where their voice is maybe encouraged, but unless it produces something for the blind, it's ignored. So, so for us, the bottom line is not the traditional. I mean, we don't want to. And most people who are there for a short bit of time usually stay for a while.
Great. Well, let's take a break here, and we'll come back. And just want to let you all know out there, you're listening to In the Meantime. This is DJ Sweetie on Enemy Combatant Radio. We're going to take a quick musical break, and we'll come back with Melissa and Bernard from Inkworks.
Sarabalia con tu mante. Credi, non paye, tu sarabalia con tu mante.
Sospei. Jurutala nenga di meleku meleku wali feta bagai temere. Na saratu masera ikana, dana ya kana boyika. Jurutala nenga di meleku meleku wali feta bagai temere. Saratuma sera ikana sarati kankana tina yurutala nengadi meleku meleku wali feta bakaitami na saratuma sera ikana lana ya kana ikam na folo e sitanale ye na folo ko angandila jakana dana ya bani nyonje wari e sitanale ye wari ko angandila jakana dana ya bani nyonje wari mani
All right, this is DJ Swan in the meantime and about red.net. We are back. We're talking with Melissa and Bernard from Inkworks in Berkeley, California. And we are going to get back into the conversation here. While we are off taking our break, we talked about looking at personnel issues and what are the internal mechanics of Inkworks. How is it that a new member might be surprised by the kind of power that they have at Inkworks, whereas a job that's not worker-owned or unionized, they might never experience something like that. So maybe you can tell us a little bit, I'm not sure how you'd want to break it down, but tell us how Inkworks is different internally than that in a sort of a corporate environment.
Well, the first thing that new members comment on and are surprised about is the number of meetings that they have to go to.
Yeah.
And we all feel that. But I think it's a really important part of how we work. Just to sort of break down our structure, we're in departments. So there's like the front department and then the pre-press and the presses and the bindery. And they are relatively autonomous in sort of determining their own procedures with the help of a management group and in collaboration with other departments. Printing is so collaborative, but departments do set some of their own policies and procedures. For the day-to-day operations of the shop, there's a management group, which is like our production manager and general manager and some other people. Bernard and I are involved in that. And we don't have any power to hire or fire anybody. We don't do any kind of disciplinary action. We make recommendations. We look at the bottom line. We look at the money and sort of forecast ahead for our sales and talk about our labor and the way production is going and try and implement procedures. And we make recommendations about a lot of stuff, but all major decisions about hiring and firing and money and new purchases and donations are made by the collective itself. So new members come in and they go through a trial period, a probationary period of 9 months where they learn about the collective. We sort of see what their skills are. They see how we work. And at the end of 9 months, there are several evaluations throughout, but at the end of the 9 months, they're voted into the collective. And then they become a full participating voting member. From the first day one works at Inkworks, though, they have a say in both collective matters and in their department. So I don't know if that sort of begins it. I don't know if we also have.
Was there this kind of evaluations and probationary period at the very beginning of the group as well, or is this something that's evolved?
Well, no, it evolved as the group got larger. When you have a small group of 5-6 people, evaluations happen probably on a minute-by-minute basis, unless, people are willing to crash into a wall. I think the larger the group, the more conscious you are of how to organize yourself. I mean, it's... Maybe at some point some people from Rainbow will be here and talk about their structure, but they have a remarkable structure, over 200 people, and it's democratically run, and there's no middle management. That is, it's broken up into small collectives who organize amongst themselves. In terms of our committee structure, we when people come on, it's demonstrated by our practice that they are not only there to practice their skills or learn more skills, but also some skills, let's say, with carpentry, then building maintenance and so forth. We much work in-house as we can. We try to conserve funds. And so there's that. There's the publishing committee. There's a personnel committee. There's a health and safety committee. What am I missing here?
I think that's it.
And so there's opportunities for people to participate on several levels managing the shop. And that's, except for our twice a month collective meetings are on the clock. It's part of what we consider the workday. And it's another way in which people across the shop in different departments can bond. Because if you're, for example, in the front and dealing with customers day in and day out, you may not know the people in the back unless you're brought next to them in committee structure. The people in the back are running presses.
So can you break it down in terms of timing? Like if it's an 8-hour day, I assume you work, and then is 2 hours out of that maybe devoted to meetings and kind of making decision making, or is it something like an hour out of the week that you would actually have a meeting?
It's more on a weekly basis. The management group meets regularly once a week, and the whole collective meets regularly twice a month, ad hoc as necessary. You know, the maintenance committee does more when we have more money for maintenance. The personnel committee does more when the conflicts in the shop, you know, it's sort of as needed. Both Bernard and I are on the personnel committee, and we find ourselves, I think we're one of the busiest committees because we're kind of charged with managing evaluations and getting people sort of routinizing that kind of stuff, but also with mediating conflicts as they happen. And that's one of the, I think, really important parts of Inkworks structure, which is that a print shop is an intense place. It's very stressful. People are working on deadline. Then you have sort of customer needs and machines, and it's difficult to balance it all. So there are times when tempers flare, and one of the things that the personnel committee does is step in and have an on-the-spot mediation. You know, the two people who are involved, too many more people involved in a conflict than two. And we also sort of remind people about our union contract and advocate for ourselves as workers, as well as do some of the work of managing from the sort of owner perspective.
Who do you advocate to?
When tempers flare, and one of the things that the personnel committee does is step in and have an on-the-spot mediation. You know, the two people who are involved, too many more people involved in a conflict than two. And we also sort of remind people about our union contract and advocate for ourselves as workers, as well as do some of the work of managing from the sort of owner perspective.
Who do you advocate to? I don't understand.
Tempers flare, and one of the things that the personnel committee does is step in and have an on-the-spot mediation. You know, the two people who are involved, too many more people involved in a conflict than two. And we also sort of remind people about our union contract and advocate for ourselves as workers, as well as do some of the work of managing from the sort of owner perspective.
Who do you advocate to? I don't understand.
Us Radio Network.
Tempers flare, and one of the things that the personnel committee does is step in and have an on-the-spot mediation. You know, the two people who are involved, too many more people involved in a conflict than two. And we also sort of remind people about our union contract and advocate for ourselves as workers, as well as do some of the work of managing from the sort of owner perspective.
Who do you advocate to? I don't understand.
Quality and capable of being delivered.
Tempers flare, and one of the things that the personnel committee does is step in and have an on-the-spot mediation. You know, the two people who are involved, too many more people involved in a conflict than two. And we also sort of remind people about our union contract and advocate for ourselves as workers, as well as do some of the work of managing from the sort of owner perspective.
Who do you advocate to? I don't understand.
An incredibly exciting piece.
Tempers flare, and one of the things that the personnel committee does is step in and have an on-the-spot mediation. You know, the two people who are involved, too many more people involved in a conflict than two. And we also sort of remind people about our union contract and advocate for ourselves as workers, as well as do some of the work of managing from the sort of owner perspective.
Who do you advocate to? I don't understand.
That's sort of it. I mean, I don't know that I would say it exactly like that, but.
No, I wouldn't say it exactly like that. Well, it reverts back to what I was saying earlier about being a co-op in a capitalist environment. We have to, in a sense, play these games because we're forced to. So we have to do with what we can do, and it's important, just as in our regular work role, that these roles and they bond with them. For example, if I'm in sales and I have a customer and they have a deadline, Now, the production manager is going to maybe advocate for the production people and saying, we're stressing out. We can't produce this. And we balance around. We try to see what's possible. Maybe another job that's up can be delayed a day or so. That customer wouldn't mind if their job came late. Mm-hmm. So those things all have to be worked out. But people work them out by playing these roles. And they're very serious roles. It's not just play role playing. It's how they bond with their job.
Two bottom lines in mind, which is our own interest as workers and the interest of the community, the movement that we're serving. And those are always there, even when the management group says, look, I think we need to do this, you know. And part of the way InkWork's structure is I think, really great and a powerful model is that we have created counterweights to the management, right? And the management doesn't have
decentralized.
It's how they bond with their job.
Two bottom lines in mind, which is our own interest as workers and the interest of the community, the movement that we're serving. And those are always there, even when the management group says, look, I think we need to do this, you know. And part of the way InkWork's structure is I think, really great and a powerful model is that we have created counterweights to the management. Right, and the management doesn't have managerial power.
CriticalMassRadio.net.
How they bond with their job.
Two bottom lines in mind, which is our own interest as workers and the interest of the community, the movement that we're serving. And those are always there, even when the management group says, look, I think we need to do this, you know. And part of the way InkWork's structure is I think, really great and a powerful model is that we have created counterweights to the management, right? And the management doesn't have managerial power.
In the Battle of Iraq,
how they bond with their job.
Two bottom lines in mind, which is our own interest as workers and the interest of the community, the movement that we're serving. And those are always there, even when the management group says, look, I think we need to do this, you know. And part of the way InkWork's structure is I think, really great and a powerful model is that we have created counterweights to the management, right? And the management doesn't have managerial power.
Radio Network. That's right. Lock your doors, put the twins in the cellar, and hide Laura with your mother. Here comes the revolution.
When the management group says, look, I think we need to do this, you know, and part of the way InkWork's structure is I think, really great and a powerful model is that we have created counterweights to the management, right? And the management doesn't have managerial power. Two bottom lines in mind.